forever.
Who are they? Who indeed are these? Shunned by society? Forbidden from the walls of the sacred castles? They were the sonorous outcast scions of a doomed civilization. They lived among us. They walked at night. They were the underculture. The underculture. They were the underculture. They were the underculture.
Hello, listeners. This is James Adomian, host of The Underculture, and I have some very special news this week. As you no doubt already know, on Tuesday, The Underculture received a subpoena from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the House Judiciary Committee requesting audio footage from this very podcast, apparently to be used in the newly impaneled impeachment inquiry against President Donald J. Trump. This is big news to me, and I'm just finding this as I was hungover and they roused me from my slumber and hurried me down here. Forever Dog picked me up in a special Forever Dog limousine with Forever Dog flags on the front hood and spirited me down here to the studio. The House of Representatives investigators have found that we here at The Underculture have been getting all this leaked footage over the last several months. Some of it from government sources. I mean, I don't know what they would want with a 30-year-old interview between Orson Welles and Liza Minnelli. Nonetheless, I understand that they are expanding the inquiry beyond simply the phone call with the Ukrainian prime minister. And I suppose they want to be as thorough as possible. That's what I understand. So they're chasing down every possible connection. I don't know. But whatever the reason, we here at The Underculture are happy to be of service. And I do understand that. Obviously, we've had footage that's sort of creeping around the edges of this brewing scandal. We've had several clips leaked from Joe Biden's campaign. We've had Donald Trump and other high-ranking political officials of the current day, like Sebastian Gorka, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So the House of Representatives sent this little young podcast a list of episodes with time codes. It was very specific, very intimidating, very official, but also, I have to say, a little flattering. I mean, I knew that this podcast, The Underculture, was getting some good stuff, but I did not realize that our reputation had extended this far to the point of national historical significance. I mean, I thought we would have more impact on the Teapot Dome scandal, the Credit Mobiliaire scandal, but here we are. And look, for those of you going, wow, James, just folding for the state. Yes. I mean, obviously, I've not been shy about hiding the fact that I have a background as an anarcho-socialist. But let's face it, they have all the power and all the guns. So when they tell me what to do, I'm happy to comply. And I sold out. And you could probably pinpoint the exact moment that I sold out, which was when I went on Mind of Mincia at the very beginning of my career in 2005. So there was no obstacle there. They said subpoena. I said, how big? So I was rushed down to the studio today. We've been listening back to all the clips they requested. And I have to say, this is actually an accident. It happens to be some of our best stuff creatively. So what we thought we would do is this. Along with complying with transcripts and recordings, they want everything on DVD discs and reel-to-reel tapes, all that stuff we have, the original evidence. We're sending that back to the Speaker of the House and the Judiciary Committee. But for this week's episode, it happens to be episode 21, we thought we'd play all the files that we put together to comply with this House of Representatives subpoena. It's basically the Underculture's greatest hits, what do you know? And if you've been listening all along, it'll be a fun trip down memory lane. And if you've been listening, I don't know, halfway along, you'll get caught up on some of the early stuff. And if you're new to the show or writing about it for a major news outlet without listening to it, it'll be the perfect place to start. To reiterate and be very clear, we have been ordered by the United States House of Representatives to run a clip show here right now for the Underculture podcast here on the Forever Dog Network. So we should have this, and we do. So I hope you're happy, Speaker Pelosi. This is the Underculture's official response to House Judiciary Committee subpoena HJ578495. Take it away!
Regarding House Judiciary Committee subpoena HJ578495, evidence pertaining to the impeachment inquiry against Donald J. Trump, as provided by the Underculture podcast in conjunction with James Adomian and the Forever Dog Podcast Network. These recordings have been notarized with an inaudible podcast watermark. File UC1, podcast interview between TV presenter Chris Matthews and United States Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
But I want to ask you this, because okay. You moved to D.C. and you had nothing. You moved like almost like a pauper. You moved to D.C., had nothing to your name. You were a bartender. You were elected to Congress. Before you had been Bernie Sanders, you're a bartender. Bernie swoops in. And I'm trying to give credit to a man here, if at all possible. Bernie swoops in. Suddenly you have meaning in your life. You're up for Congress. Bam, what do you know? Magic pumpkin. You're deposited in the steps. You have nothing. You're complaining on the MySpace. You're complaining on your top eight that you don't have. Oh, you're...
And I'm going to be streaming this right now because everyone on Instagram needs to know that this gentleman here is telling me that a man is responsible for it and that bartending is wrong. Bartending, I am proud
to be
a bartender.
She's streaming this. It's a hostile stream. Kick her off the Wi-Fi.
I'm surprised you even knew what Wi-Fi was, but you did kick me off. But I will be recording this and putting this out later because
we got Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi. The password is politics. All the O's are zeros.
Okay, so you just gave me the password. So now I will log back in and continue the hostile stream as you mentioned.
Look, it's just interlocutive role of the press. I don't know why somebody who's interested in open government like you would be opposed to a journalist distorting facts the way I am. Let me ask you this. You moved into D.C. with nothing to your name. Rags, shoes that were falling off your feet. You moved in with the following on the Instagram, but almost nothing else. And then you were complaining about you didn't have furniture. How did that work? Did you get a blow-up mattress? What do you have?
Okay, so first, I would just like to say that having that amount of money, there is no shame in that. I find no shame in having that little money, and so I do shop at IKEA, and I take issue.
You shop at IKEA? Do you get lost?
I do, and I'm glad you brought that up. I take issue with IKEA. I believe strongly that as an American and as a young woman and as a New Yorker, I am from New York. I'm from New York.
We've heard this. It's your go-to reset button.
Pizza, apples. Apples. If you're going outside the Big Apple, right? And the L train. I'm talking about the subways. Okay. I mean the Union Square Farmers Market.
Union Square Farmers Market. You get off at Union Square. There's a big clock up there. Sometimes you're late to where you're good. It's a 4-5-6.
Yes, it's the 4-5-6.
Did you
Grand
Central down to Union Square?
You could do that easily on a local or on an express. There are options for people.
So you think the express train should be available for commuters, but not for billionaires in society.
I truly do believe that billionaires they really should just give us their cars to be used as trains.
So you just want a few billionaires to turn over their Jaguars?
I don't think that's too
Bentleys.
Much to ask, Chris, for the Bentleys.
You're going to string them together as some kind of like hobbled together kind of public transit, just a bunch of rich guys' cars, stretch limos?
I think that the world would be a better place if we did that.
File UC2, former Deputy Assistant to the President, Sebastian Gorka, speaking on the decadence of American cartoons.
Woody Woodpecker, the vanguard of the Eastern Hordes. Indeed, Mr. Pecker. On down through the generations, SpongeBob and Patrick. They don't even have the decency to have one of them on the top and the other one on the bottom. Rolling around like versatile fools. And the only heterosexual in the entire cartoon, Mr. Crab, is mocked ruthlessly for his adherence to free market principles. Ren and Stimpy! A clear, pure representation of bondage, domination, and sadomasochism on American's children cartoon, far, far worse than anything of the Nickelodeons of yore could have predicted. For those of you saying that this is a sickness on my part, that this is a paranoia in my mind, the mind of Gorka, I remind you, you must think like the enemy. I have met the enemy, and it is Darkwing Duck, also known as Drake Mallard, depicted in his cartoon series as living with an adult male lover, Launchpad McQuack, and they've adopted a little daughter. Disgusting. An attack on the molecular structure of Western civilization! Mr. Darkwing, I will remind you that I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the swift and sudden curtailment of civil liberties. I am Gorka!
File UC-3-1, President John F. Kennedy inauguration speech previously omitted from historical record.
The torch has been passed to this new generation of baby boomers. My message to them today is to accumulate as much wealth as they possibly can and to give as little of that wealth to others as they so please. You have inherited a great and powerful infrastructure in this country and in this world. It is your duty to make sure that infrastructure crumbles or is severely degraded by the time you enter your overly comfortable retirement years. As the tremendous democratic institutions that have been given to you inevitably collapse, I urge you to blame others. This is our great challenge. This is our great calling. When, in a small number of months from now, this very president will be struck down by elements obviously from within his own government, I urge you to sit back and accept whatever explanation is given to you on the evening news. The next generation, that of your immediate offspring, I ask you to refer to with the humiliating and dismissive title of Generation X. The subsequent generation to emerge shall come of age sometime around about the turn of the millennium. And so correspondingly, I ask you to call them millennials and to blame them for the decay, destruction, and inevitable crumbling of this great empire which you have been bequeathed and yet do not appreciate. And so finally, I say unto you, the members of this baby boom generation, ask not just what your country can do for you, ask what your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, what subsequent generations there may come, and indeed what the planet itself can do for you, even unto their great detriment. You are the last generation. You are the culmination. You are the final party of a world doomed to extinction.
File UC-4-1, podcast interview between comedian Mark Maron and comedian Rip Taylor.
That's funny.
We first met, and we actually clashed. We first met on Conan. Because I held the record for the most Conan appearances, and then it's an interesting fact. I didn't realize this because I didn't come from a place where I respected you. The second most common the second most frequent. You were actually the second most frequent Conan guest.
I sure was. I came in the first time. I said, Conan, where's my ice cream?
Now, to be fair, I was doing 5-minute sets, 10-minute sets, couch bits, panel. You always came on to do the same thing, just basically as a punchline, throwing the confetti.
Yeah, well, I get the paper and the hair because I got the wig on. I came out and said, Conan, is that Conan O'Brien or does someone dip a Q-tip in blood?
But, you know, it feels like the whole act, like you're hiding something. It feels like there's something that you don't want to talk about. This is what you're talking about, the thing.
Are you kidding, man?
Let me ask you this. You get the confetti. People don't laugh. You talk over it. Is there any laughter at all? Is it even comedy? Or is it a crutch? Is it a crutch? And you just keep talking, and instead of laughter, people just look at you.
I'm a beloved performer for decades. I was discovered in Miami Beach by Ms. Debbie Reynolds herself, then Dean Martin. I come from legends, and I'm very grateful and lucky, and you should have more gratitude.
Is that how we're going to remember you, Miami Beach?
Yeah, why don't you get out your six-string guitar and do a folk song, you hippie?
Okay, look, at least I kept the guitar out of the act. The guitar isn't... You come after me like this. This is the kind of thing. We got into it backstage at Conan back in the day in New York.
Well, I came
He threw this confetti in my face. He didn't like it. I said, fuck off.
Well, you kids like you have no sense of humor at all. Confetti's something... I did a gig on New Year's Eve. Let me tell you a story about me.
I was trying to have beef with you, but you just railroaded right through it.
I'm mad at you, too. I told you. I got plenty of beef. Well, I'll have a liverwurst sandwich up your ass in a minute, you son of a bitch.
File UC42, unaired radio commercial for MyPillow, featuring founder and CEO Mike Lindell.
Now, some people have complained that MyPillow is hard to sleep with at night because me, Mike Lindell, is involved with Donald Trump and I've endorsed him. Let me address that directly by telling you my story. I used to roam the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul in crack-fueled nightmares without getting sleep for weeks, months, maybe years at a time. I once broke into my own house and held myself hostage. That's how far down I went. My pillow is the only thing that saved me, along with Jesus Christ and hardcore right-wing Christian nationalism. I couldn't get crack from anybody all over Hennepin County. I went down to the Minnesota State Fair. I held up a booth with cheese on a stick as a handgun, and I swear to God, I tried to rob them. That's how far I was. And let me tell you, what saved me was a vision that I got knocked off a horse like St. Paul on the road to Damascus. I saw a blazing vision of my pillow. I saw it. I saw it, and it said, Mike Lindell, why do you persecute me? There's nothing I've ever wanted more than the comfort of sleep. You can confess your sins to my pillow. Nobody will hear it unless you turn on the optional listening device, in which case I'll hear your confessions, and I'll micro-target you for more MyPillow accessories. MyPillow Throw Pillow, where you can have a domestic dispute and nobody gets hurt except for you, because MyPillow Throw Pillow gives back as good as it gets. MyPillow, try it out! It's got memory foam, but it doesn't remember the bad parts, like getting bukkakied on just to get a rock before you had to go in for lunch. Please, keep buying my pillow. It's the only thing keeping me from hell, from Mephistopheles himself. I have a shrine to my pillow where I burn scraps of lesser pillows in front of it to let it know that it is the god of sleep. Log on to MyPillow and tell them you subscribe to the Forever Dog Network, and they'll send someone around to slap you in the face until you fall asleep with a bloody cheek on the side of your own MyPillow that you'll be debited for automatically.
File UC-51, footage from unaired public television program Painting with George W. Bush, featuring former President George W. Bush.
And at this point, you want to start to paint in, I don't know, beautiful cityscape. You want to start to paint in stuff that's out there. A city that might be scared. Maybe it's a little bit too liberal. All kinds of colors. go into it. And it's morning time. You got light coming up. And you start to see, what does that look like? There's a couple of buildings, some big towers. And look at that. You just paint it. If you paint, then that's what painting is. We're starting to see some towers. There's a couple of ones that are bigger than the other ones. They're nice and gray, but sometimes the light hits them, and when light hits something, it becomes light. That's what our science understands. So now we got these towers coming up, and there's a whole bunch of people. They're just showing up to work. You could draw them. They could look like a happy little people, but if from a certain distance and a certain level of power, any kind of individual person, you don't need to care what they actually look like or what their lives are all about. They're just dots. They're just little sticks, whatever they're doing. It doesn't matter if they keep doing it or if they're, oops, something happens. Maybe they're not going to do it much longer. As long as it's for a bigger cause. And as long as nobody knows how it happened. So now we've got these big towers, morning time, all these people showing up, and then, uh-oh, a couple of planes, rip, zip, bam, 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 bam. Now you're going to put blood, orange, big pile of smoke. You definitely want to have the defense fighter pilot planes that are coming to save the day. You got Air Force, and Air Force has airplanes, but you're going to tell them to stand down. So those planes actually don't do anything. They come in, but then you just kind of swipe them out and they turn around. So you put little arrows. They go back out. They let it keep happening. And then the towers, oop, uh-oh, towers come down. And there's going to be tremendous smoke. Some of it's going to be radioactive. And you're not going to want people to ask too many questions about that. So you want to, then you want to dip in a different kind of paint here, and then it's going to start covering up what happened. And we're going to make sure that we go back and redo the towers falling down, but this time they fall. Look, it could have happened to anybody. Uh-oh, maybe the towers fell down the stairs. You draw some stairs, and the towers fell down. What you're drawing is excuses. Nobody's going to ask no question. You're president. You're president of paint. And then what you draw in after that, there's a bunch of people crying and screaming, and uh-oh, some of them died. Now we're going to draw in a new regime of power. And that involves, here it is, draw a little eagle up in the sky, and then a circle around it, and the eagle's holding on to some pencils in its legs, or he's grabbing some claws, pencils and claws. And then he drives up. There it is. Homeland Security. He's an eagle. There's always an eagle in a circle. And now all the people down there, whatever survived, whatever of them, they start doing whatever the eagle tells them. So where there was once tower, now there is power. Now it's just fun. You start having horns come out of the smoke figures. And then you're maybe off in the way background, there's the sun. And the sun sees through it all. You just draw the sun. He's orange. He's got eyes that never stop looking at you. And his eyes are scary. Just make the dots in the eyes, and they stare. They stare. They see exactly what happened, but it's the sun. What's it going to do? So there's the sun, and it's crying. And it's looking at this up, down, upside down. And it just looks like a whole, it's a sunshiny nightmare. And that's just, to me, that's art. And you leave it a little bit raw. You don't explain everything. It's just up there. And then, I don't know, just for fun on the way out, here, get a little bit of red paint. Just throw it at the canvas. That ought to teach some motherfuckers.
File UC-52, podcast interview between former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura and notable athlete and television presenter Shaquille O'Neal.
Actor to actor, I've got something I want to work on with you.
Yeah?
I'm doing in the production. I can't do so much combat sports, so I'm doing a wrestling-themed production of True West.
Okay.
The play, the famous play, was written by the famous playwright Sam Shepard.
Okay.
He had a flock of sheep, and then he decided maybe it's time to write some plays.
Wow.
Better to herd actors. It was famously on Broadway, it was John Malkovich and Gary Sinise.
Oh, okay.
And there was a two-man play, and it was True West, and they were just yelling at each other, basically.
Okay.
So I'm trying to book. It's in the St. Paul Repertory Light Opera.
I've been there. I played there.
You played a basketball game
during,
there?
During the NBA lockout of 1999, they set up two baskets.
Was it during an operatic performance?
It was almost. It was during the intermission. The intermission
of Don Giovanni.
But then we weren't done yet. We weren't done yet when they came back, so we just had to continue the game while they started the playback. But let's just say I bought the Twin Cities.
My God. St. Paul. My God. Holy God. Holy shit. That's an unbelievable cross between sports entertainment and operatic entertainment. That explains why it made the Minnesota Star Tribune, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I remember when I was governor, production of Don Giovanni. There was, instead of the big monster breaking through the wall, it was a big invasion of basketball players.
Yeah, it was me
hopping through like Kool-Aid Man.
It was Shaquille O'Neal.
Unbelievable! I can't believe I didn't post that together.
David Robinson. It's me and David Robinson.
So let's do these sides from True West.
Okay,
I'm trying to book this part.
All right.
Maybe with your help. Hey, which way is West?
West is right over there.
What do you mean? That's where I just came from. I thought that was the East.
Well, sir, you were going the right way. Sometimes you just got to believe in yourself.
What are you telling me? That the way I'm going is the way I shouldn't be going, then I should turn around? Use your damn mind.
Hey, sir, this is a bar. Now, you want a drink? You want to have a chat with me? We can do that.
A True West walks into a bar and you're going to tell me what to do just because you're a bartender?
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that I'll have to tell you to just... Well, I'm not going to say that. You're going to have to F yourself, mister.
Hey, my mother's sitting over there.
Well, then she can go F herself, too, if that's true.
Hey.
Yeah?
My mother... You're sitting over there.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll meet you to settle this. And you can bring your mother and the other bee that you call a mother along with you, and we can settle this right outside.
This is the problem. I don't know which one of these women is my mother.
I don't know which way is West, and you don't know which way is mother.
That's correct.
It's almost like we're both mixed up in two different directions.
Maybe we should both head
True West. Honestly, I think that was better. That was better than Malkovich and Sinise could have pulled off.
File UC6, radio interview between philosopher Slavoj Žižek and professional wrestler Andre the Giant.
We may not agree, but I always understand where your point of view is coming from. And this is a treasure for someone known for physical violence, whether it is real or not real. Is it true?
What do you mean not real?
I understand you. There is the reality. There is a reality at moments. There is at once a reality of the professional wrestling combat. Simultaneously, there is an unreality. There is the dialectic from the Hegelian analysis, where it's simultaneously real and unreal. Do you see that there is the thesis, the antithesis, being that it is fake and yet real, and then
not
there is the
fake,
synthesis?
Boss, is not fake!
Careful. If you are not familiar, our great friendship, Andre the Giant and I, we have more in common than they would than the average fool selling corn or wheat on the side of the street would understand that a giant and a madman would have in common with each other. We have been known to attempt to exercise together. He tried to get me into shape because, let's face it, I am shaped like a Slimer from the Ghostbusters film. I am shaped very similar to Slimer.
He funny, man. He tricked the food and he thawed up everywhere.
Similar to this analysis, to this reality, I am also living on food cart in hotel in Paris, in Lubania, in sometimes in Vienna. And I am haunting, basically sitting on food cart, spinning around through walls and slobber. And the only way to get control with me is with ectoplasm.
And the Ghostbuster movie make me cry.
You cry through Ghostbuster.
The big marshmallow man.
Well, you have had a career in acting in these films. Have Hollywood, was there a time that you were in contention to have to play the great marshmallow man from the great film, literary work of the Ghostbusters?
I'll never play Marshall Man. I may make him evil. They shoot gun at him. He good man. He just too big to fit between buildings.
It's representative of the brand, of marketing, of a brand, a cuddly marshmallow. And yet, like capitalism, on the surface, there is a niceness. There is, in my opinion, there is from the certain, from a Marxian analysis. And there's a deep one. There's a very deep booger that I'm just going to get. In my analysis from the Marxist Hegelian dialectic, that there is the representation of the marshmallow man as positive, as a great mythos to look up to. And yet, at the same time, he is wreaking destruction on the fabric of society.
Remember, good move. He's just trying to find place to hide.
And this we always disagree with, but when we disagree, we can always...
No, I'm right!
File UC-71. Philosopher Alan Watts on the unreality of the material world, recovered from the Alan Watts Radio Library, courtesy of Pacifica Radio and Associated Radicals.
The greatest, most serious point of our existence is that it means nothing. It's all a game, you see. The reality that you know is the reality that you have been conditioned to understand as real. But when you take a look at it, when you really look at it, when you put your glasses on or when you take them off or when you squint your eyes, you know, in a spiritual sense, what comes into focus is that nothing you know is real. You might say, well, that's not true. I put my hand on the stove and it burns. Why, yes. But the sensation is not there, because you aren't there. If you're burning yourself on a stove, there's merely billions of molecules that have decided, or been forced, to hurt themselves. So you might as well barbecue it. Roast your hand on the stove. It's not real. You might as well cook your hand. If you don't like eating meat, you can throw it to a dog. The dog is not real either. But if you're going to burn your hand, you might as well not beat yourself up about it. Say, I'm burning my hand. Everything dies. All things die. Death is part of life, you understand. I'm now drawing the character of infinity, which is the same character as nothing. Only doubled over. You are not real.
Hey, everybody. This is the B-Man, OBW, from the World Record Podcast. And I'm here to let you know that me and my co-host, the A-Train, a.k.a. Hershey Hellman, took over Office Hours live this week. We came into the studio. We made it our own. We wrecked the place. I stole one of Tim Heidecker's guitars. So check out Office Hours live on your podcast app of your choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live this week and see what happens. Or go to worldrecordpodcast.com and you can watch the videos or join the Patreon, patreon.com/worldrecordpodcast. Enjoy the show!
It's showtime!
The irony, of course, is that to have the authority to say such a thing, you must violate that central principle. Well, here I am saying this to you. I'm not real either. That's why listening to me is a waste of time. I am essentially a backyard fraud from the late 1960s and early 1970s. Sent to soothe the pain of people whose brains are too big. That's why they play me on KPFK. That's why you hear me at 3 a.m. on the radio, when you're too stoned, crying, leaving a party, because you didn't get what you want. And then you hear this, and you go, ooh. What could that be? It is nothing but the echo of eternal nothingness. But since it's rippling through you in a familiar pattern that you know to your mind and your ear, since the voice sounds like Tony the Tiger is trying to seduce you, you come to think of it as some sort of great cigarette-smoking enlightened fool in the mountains, and that's exactly what I am. Constantly drunk, high on tobacco at every moment. Psilocybin mushrooms coursing through my veins. I smell of lysergic acid. And yet, somehow I've passed myself off as the voice of wisdom itself. This is nothing but a pure hat trick. I've fooled you all. I am a fraud. And I am God revealed at the same time.
File UC-72. Podcast interview between United States Senator Bernie Sanders and United States Senator Elizabeth Warren.
When my mother was working one of her 17 jobs a day, working for a family whose mobiles above, you know, when a baby has a mobile above a crib.
I am very familiar with the mobile above the crib. I think for far too long they have been capitalist motivational imagery,
and
unnecessarily so. I would motivate people with image rotating images of Eugene V. Debs.
I would absolutely.
Franklin Roosevelt, Eleanor Roosevelt.
And that brings me to one of my more exciting policy plans.
I have a baby mobile above my crib. I do sleep in a crib. Jane and I sleep in a crib, and there are.
And I've had the pleasure of tucking you once or twice.
You have been
May
a house
I call
guest.
Call you Senator.
Thank you. Thank you for asking. Of course you could call me Senator. Senator.
I'm going to ask if I can call you Bernie, but I'll ask later on.
Some children have little Fisher-Price things that they set up where they get to honk something or pretend that they're cooking breakfast or whatever. I have a little Fisher-Price set up next to my crib that is a white on Oval Office of a White House. So that's how I practice what if Bernie gets to be president. I have a little desk. I've got little Fisher-Price plastic bills that I sign.
It's that kind of playfulness, may I call you Bernie, that I,
sure.
I find so missing from our political debate. The ability to play with toys, the ability to bring improv skills into our legislation that we are missing from the public debate today.
It's interesting that you mention this. In the mid-1980s, I took improv classes.
Because I do want to get to the policy. I do want to get to the policy.
Of course, there's nothing but policy. We could talk about policy. I want to get to the policy as much as you do.
And I want to get to it just as much as you do, if
not
slightly more. You may.
Look. I am just, believe me, nobody likes policy more than I do. If you're playing around, dancing around, talking about toys, I want to talk about toys.
Absolutely. And I did not mean to interrupt you, but
this is the kind of vigorous debate that people who almost always agree with each other can have.
Exactly.
I think, in my view, and when I say that, what I mean is my hard, stubborn opinion. In my view, for far too long, the American people have been kept from the ability to take improv classes. When I was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, I enrolled in a local comedy sports team. Where you wear the referee things and it's clean. Yes. I liked it because it was clean.
And those people have health care.
And you blow the whistle and you do the zip-zapping and zopping.
And you do seven things. And you name
That's right.
seven different things, and someone comes into the middle of the circle, and everyone around those people are expected to also name seven things.
And you want to try a little improv game? What's the topic? Can we get a suggestion? There's nobody in the room here.
Well, let's take a suggestion.
If you look around, I have some books. I've got some.
Henry David Thoreau. Tripped over. Here, how about this? Let's just pick this.
Frederick Engels.
This book from Hannah Arendt. All right. I chose the word the.
Hannah Arendt, a very nice recent author.
I chose the word the. From this book. And I think that's a good place to start.
Okay, so it's an article. Go ahead. One.
So seven, I think I'm supposed to name seven types of
the.
The audacity of our politicians, the uncontrollable greed.
That's a good one.
The private jets. The taxation on our poorest and most vulnerable Americans. The wind in my hair as I walk at a clip with my dogs, of which I don't know how many I have.
A brisk outdoor exchange of ideas with the natural
air. Enables me to see the kind of debates.
Was that five or six?
I'm counting six.
Okay, that's six.
And I have two more.
You're giving yourself one more. Point of order. She's giving herself one more.
Nevertheless.
So in the interest of fair debate, I believe that I should get eight as well.
The less, that's seven, I persist.
Oh, nevertheless. You did persist. Nevertheless, she persisted. Let us not forget those bumper stickers.
This is the kind of improvisational game that's in the water in Flint, Michigan.
This is the kind of, you achieved
it
that way.
I've done it, and I cheated, and I got nine.
File UC-8, podcast interview between television presenter Chris Matthews and United States Senator Cory Booker.
Somebody created me 127 candidates, it looks like, running for president. As of today, the big news this morning, I think you saw it on the crawl here on the bottom of the podcast screen. Rob Reiner, famous fat guy, California, anti-smoking crusader, running for president, formerly of All the Family. He's pulling in. He's entered the race today, and he's already pulling ahead of you, Cory Booker. How do you handle this with sitcom characters with no political experience besides holding fundraisers for Harvey Weinstein? Are we already entering the race and being better than you in the race's first numbers?
Well, I love Rob Reiner. I'm a huge fan, obviously. I love Hollywood. I don't want to take anything away from him, but this is a tortoise and a hare situation, okay? I'm steady as she goes. I think when it comes down to it, he's steady as she goes. There you go. Yeah, I love music. He's gonna have to answer for North, I think. A lot of people are gonna have a problem with that. That movie did not do well. And my movie,
My movie
Street Fight, about me winning mayor in Newark.
That's right. It's a little watched movie.
It won an Oscar, though.
It won an Oscar, but nobody saw it. Maybe that's a secret to winning an Oscar. Documentaries, they figured it out. Nobody watches the documentaries. So if you just have a few agents watch a documentary, that's enough to win an Oscar.
That's all it takes. People don't realize, and I'm really proud of that.
You're proud of it. So you think, what was it? It was called Hey, I'm Corey. What was it called? Officers Booker and Take Her Away. What was the name of it again?
It was called Street Fight.
Street Fight.
Street Fight.
Street Fight. It's violent. It's all violent, but it was like a non-violent thing.
It was a violent area, but I was giving out love, and that's what I believe, and that's what I do.
Do you think you should be a playable, if you're president, you should be a playable player, a Street Fighter video game, 8-bit, 16-bit graphics?
I think it's very cool. If people want to make me a Street Fighter or make me into a video game, as long as it brings in money for the state of New Jersey, I'm happy about it.
I can imagine if somebody would change. I mean, if I was playing, I was pop some quarters into a video arcade game. There's a Cory Booker option for one of the Street Fighter characters. You would kind of just stand there. You would kind of stand there, try to hug people, maybe give people a smile, take donations from large corporations in the medical industry, medical healthcare industry, but you probably wouldn't land any punches, and I guess you'd probably go down after never peaking above 1%.
You know, if I have any input on the game, I think you're going to win points for not throwing punches, okay? There's a lot of people that I want to maybe take a swing at or a jibe at, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be, when they go low, we go high, but I also go even higher than that. That's my aim.
They tell me that Michelle Obama famously, when they go low, you go high.
Yeah.
But even if you're taking that one step further,
yeah,
in empty rhetoric, you're saying that you actually just go even higher than high.
That's right.
So is no one saying that. Is it above high C? You gotta have an unknown above high C? You break the glass?
You know, if they're at the top floor, I'm in the attic. If they're in the attic, I'm on the roof. If they're on the roof, I'm in a helicopter. That's what I believe in.
So you just believe physically in being at a higher altitude? Well, then how are you going to compete with Beto O'Rourke? He's standing on tables.
He's a tall guy.
His teeth are long. He is all, as tall as he is, the teeth are almost dragging on the floor, and he's standing on big counters in coffee shops to avoid his teeth dragging on the people's feet.
You know, how long can he do that, though? That's my guess. How long can he stand on tables or stand on roofs or attics or get in a helicopter? You know, that's the thing he's not planning for. He's actually just trying to stand on things, but I'm trying to elevate myself, hover above things if metaphorically possible.
Or in some kind of vehicular matter.
I'm working on some kind of some dark magics. Sure.
Dark magic. If physically dark matter, are you trying to get to a different dimension to hover above the situation?
You know, I'm not saying that I can do it, but I'm saying that I definitely will do it soon enough. So they have to think about that when they're focused on one thing right now. Maybe it's percentage points or whatever. But I'm worried about changing my actual physical being to become something different.
Because the Cory Booker thing's not working out. Now, if you register to run for president under the name Cory Booker, Senator of the United States, New Jersey, New Jersey, and you try to transform yourself into, I don't know, so let's say the Avenger, what's a good name for it? What's a guy like, the Caustic Hierophant or whatever you want to call yourself in the other netherworld? You can hold some like candles, dripping wax. Do you think the registration, the certification as a candidate is still good? Or you have to change your recertify, start the campaign over?
You know, I think that the people will get behind it. If people want to see me in a different metaphysical state, they're gonna go with that, and they're gonna support that, and that's what I want.
File UC-9, telephone conversation between former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura and author, activist, and presidential candidate Marianne Williamson.
Let me ask you this. You were saying about Stephen Hawking that you think there's a union of science and the tradition of science and also wild, far-out theories from comic books.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. I was going to say Stephen Hawking believed in alternate universes, and he was about to prove it before they killed him.
The way you say universe says, is the same way I see it. There's two S's there. They both deserve to be pronounced.
They both deserve to be pronounced because there's not just one other universes. There could be hundreds and thousands of possible other universes.
Ah, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne.
Well, I feel so sad for the people who don't understand these things, Jesse, and
we
I'm
feel
so
compassion.
Happy.
We feel
we are
compassion.
On the same page of the same book in the same library.
We're on
the same planet.
When I talk to you, I feel like I'm on the same frame of a paused YouTube video that's on a playlist of what's really happening.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Now, you said in the debate that the first thing you did when you were president of the United States was you were going to call...
I was going to call my friend Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, and say, girlfriend, you are so on. Just to let her know that what she says and what she believes in is exactly where this country needs to be.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. If I was president, the first phone call I would make would be to the Samoan SWAT team, which is as close as I can come to that. I would make an immediate phone call to the Samoan SWAT team and say, guys, I'm in. Let's do a bump. Let's do an exhibition wrestling match right here in the White House.
File UC-10, podcast interview between actors Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart. Note: this recording falls under the purview of the National Security Agency.
Should you join me in my home, Patrick, which yes. I hope you would join us for tea.
Well, I'd love to come over.
You will be asked to put on the Greek theater mask. There is a wide range available from King Creon,
yes.
From Antigone to, of course, Oedipus Rex. And then I ask my guests to strap on a phallus, an Aristophanian phallus.
Or what if I was going to be...
It might be a bird phallus or a frog phallus. Coax.
But what if I was to be Minerva? Would you have me wear a phallus?
Well, of course, Minerva has a phallus that at the end of it there is a vagina.
Yes.
It is an extended Aristophanian phallus.
You know, when I was a young boy, and you remember this, we would play together, and I would say, I want to cut this penis off and see if there's a vagina underneath. And, of course, Ian would always say, don't do it, because we don't know what's under there.
I said, don't do it.
Yes, and I went,
I said,
why?
Pretend to on stage.
And so we did. And we did that wonderful play, don't you remember, Old Choppers? And it was two men, and everyone thought it was about motorcycles. And we had a huge Hells Angels audience. And
they were coming from everywhere. That ran at the Ricardo Theatre for 4 months. It was ecstatic reviews, and no one showed up.
I was very grateful to Lucille Ball for that, because, of course, she was the one who funded that play and named the theatre the Ricky Ricardo Theatre. And
the old red-headed bat was still around. And good for something.
And she was the one who produced Star Trek, for which I would not have any fame if it wasn't for Desilu Productions.
My
which
God.
Saved Star Trek.
Star Trek produced.
66, yes.
Why weren't there more scenes of
Correct.
Captain Kirk pulling chocolates off of assembly lines?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, because when we did that, Bill, and I remember this in generations, Bill Shatner said to me, he said, I want to do a scene where we eat our own shit on a conveyor belt. And I went, I think that's insane. And he said, I murdered my wife. I went, you're right. So I said, let's
He always, he has one drink and he starts saying.
Totally confessing because I pushed her in that pool, that drunk bitch, and I pushed her under with one of the fishing things until she was down. And then I called 911 and I said, my wife is at the bottom of the pool. And the operator said, this is a real 911 call you could listen to. And the operator said, sir, well, where is she? And can you get her out? And he went, well, she's in the deep end.
You know, I am adapting the tragedy of William Shatner
yes.
into a production of Hamlet.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes, where at the end, where Claudius and Gertrude accidentally kills her. It's intentional, and it happens in a swimming pool.
File UC-11, podcast interview between former President Bill Clinton and Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Now, you do strike a figure almost like a cherished cartoon character from a Tex Avery cartoon. It almost is like I'm sitting across from Droopy's mom or something.
I've gotten that. I've also gotten Gargoyle from time to time.
Gargoyle from the Disney cartoon? Gargoyle's on the Disney Afternoon?
More like a gargoyle that sits atop a pre-war in Manhattan, overlooks justice.
Oh, sure, your classic gargoyle.
Yes.
Garden of spirits, guarding a building from the spirits if that won't take a building down.
Protector of the universe.
Have you ever... You're familiar with architecture?
Yes.
Let me ask you, you're a jurist. You're a respected jurist. That's why I elevated you to Supreme Court. I want to ask you, is there a statute of limitations for fucking a statue? If in your past, when you had a fundraising trip down in New York City or something, and maybe you climbed up, there was a penthouse, you climbed out on the edge of the ledge there, and maybe there's nobody around, you just slipped it in right in the open gaping mouth of a gargoyle that looks like, from all, in cement capacity, it's asking for it. Is that public nudity if only people watching are far, far down on the ground, 50 floors down?
I think because you're high up that you extend outside the limits of the law there.
Oh, good, it's good, because I've done a lot of stuff up in penthouses.
Unless, you know, the rats running by probably saw your wing, but
The Clinton Foundation, the sponsor of this podcast, one of the things that we are shuffling money back and forth between secret Chinese accounts and secret Swiss accounts, our holdings all the way from Sweden all the way down to Colombia, just swapping holdings around. We're just always, it's a shell game that we're playing. One of the great projects is, to remember me, as a president, because we understand that we're close to the end of this American Empire experiment, and we realize that from now on, the legacy has to be one that's appreciated by future cultures that maybe don't speak the same language that find us later on covered in vines. And so there's going to be a large sarcophagus. We're working on it. We're looking for a site. We think it's going to be somewhere down in Little Rock area, somewhere down Little Rock, maybe right there in the Ozarks, right off the beaten path, and it's also just above the floodplain, so that when global warming hits its full stride, it'll still be above where the water line is.
So your tomb will survive.
It'll be, well, exactly. The tomb will survive, and we're looking at it now, so that we're trying to arrange how, you know how some of the ancient temples, the Mayan temples, when the sunlight on the solstice hits them, there's an effect of a snake on the side
of the
stairs.
They were very advanced in their planning and architecture.
When the temple of Clinton on the vernal equinox, every year when the sun hits it, at high noon, there's going to be there's going to be an incredible erection that happens.
Oh, my God. No one's ever done that before. I think that's an absolutely brilliant idea.
And then there'll be like Indiana Jones style boulders that roll down, except they'll be, they'll tumble out and there'll be a liquid effect to them. It'll have the illusion of a liquid effect. So it'll look like the Temple of Clinton will be coming.
File UC-12, podcast interview between actor and loser Paul Giamatti and music producer Quincy Jones.
You know, I was visiting the White House.
Who was president at the time? What year was this?
Richard Nixon.
The Nixon White House. So Nixon. In the late 60s or the early 1970s.
Yeah. Nixon offered me a drink, and he said, hey, have you seen my boom boom room?
Nixon had a Richard Nixon of Yorba Linda, California had a boom boom room.
Man, Elvis was over there all the time, you know.
That there was the one iconic visit, but you're saying he was always there.
Oh, man, that's the visit that you know. That was the official visit. But the unofficial visits, man, there were all kinds of wild parties in the White House, man. And Nixon could get down, all
Nixon,
right?
So you actually
Nixon
had...
Nixon could really get down,
would you
man.
Characterize he these was, as orgies?
Oh, all kinds of orgies, man. We would do everything. Nixon was one of those guys he would really go for. He was like a... he was a coke in the butt freak. You see what I mean? He liked to do coke out of people's butts, out of people's rear ends.
I'm guessing,
man.
Henry Kissinger would have probably.
Oh, Kissinger was the first one, you know, volunteering because, you know, he was that kind of guy. You know, he was a servant, a public servant. So he'd be the first one to volunteer. He said, "Hey, Mr. President, you know, do coke out of my asshole." So that's what Nixon was about.
Do you think in some ways that may have prolonged the conflict in Vietnam?
Oh, definitely. Oh, most definitely, man. But if it wasn't for Jimmy Carter coming in and putting a stop to all that, because Carter was, you know, he was straight, man. He didn't.
So you're saying there was an orgy continuously, more or less.
Oh, in the White House? Oh, during
Jimmy Carter came in.
Started with Kennedy. Yeah. Well, it really started with Eisenhower. But nobody wanted to go.
Nobody saw this on the surface level.
Oh, no. I mean, this was secret, man. This was something, you know. So, yeah, it did start with the Eisenhower administration. But those were tame, man. Those parties wasn't shit compared
to. Dinner party, Barney Rubble.
Yeah, yeah. And then Kennedy got in, man. And you know, and from then until Carter.
Was that because he was too versatile that they had to get rid of him?
Hey, man. Now we're going down a whole another road, man. If you want to get into that, I can tell you a lot of knowledge that I got about that. Man.
You have to. Well, I want now that we've. I want to know what is it because you were on the inside. No.
Well, listen,
we can cut all of this out. None of this has to hear the light of day.
Well,
it has to be approved by my agent /Dom before it is.
Listen, I used to party with Oswald. All right. We used to party and talk.
Oswald from the music industry.
Listen, everybody knew Lee Harvey Oswald, man. You know, in the music industry, man, he was an uppers freak, man. You know, that's what he would be on. And he was always talking that communist bullshit, man. You know, he's talking shit.
Sure,
know.
the Organization to Liberate Cuba.
You know, and he would even talk about, you know, hey, I think I might be a patsy.
That in other contexts.
Oh, yeah, I got an important job coming up. You know, I'm gonna have to be in this whole thing where I'm gonna shoot the president, but it's not really me. It's,
you knew about it ahead of time by what? A couple of weeks, a couple of months?
Man. Oh, yeah. Listen, man. Listen, me and Khrushchev, one time, man, we were hanging out. In Cabo, man. And
Nikita Khrushchev.
Yeah, I passed the joint to him and I said, hey, man.
In Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, man. Khrushchev loved to go down to Mexico, man. He loved to party in Mexico.
So he would take off his shoe and bang it to party then.
Let me tell you something, what was in that shoe, man. You don't know what was really in that shoe?
What was in it?
When
I'm
he
guessing-
banged that shoe, that meant... I want this up my asshole. That's what that meant. He would bang it on the table, and everybody knew, like, oh, it's time, man. You know, next thing you know, his pants come off.
I don't know what it's like to have the freedom to say I want or don't want something to go up my asshole. To me, it just happens when someone else decides that it's going to happen.
Well, no, it's not Khrushchev, man. He was, you know, he was a powerful man. You know,
if you're the premier director of the Soviet Union, I guess there's perks.
There you go. That's right, man.
You were involved in high level underground sexual liaisons at the highest levels of powers in this country and other countries. The closest I've ever come to that was that. I shouldn't say come to that because I strictly wasn't allowed to come, but I was in the film Eyes Wide Shut that Stanley Kubrick was making as a pig bottom. I was wearing a medieval Italian clown mask, and I was having gelato forcibly stuffed into my mouth and asshole in the background of a Tom Cruise monologue.
Oh, wow.
And of course, when Stanley Kubrick died and lost control of the film, they cut me out. But there, every character in the Eyes Wide Shut film that's wearing a Venetian mask took turns slapping or fisting or dumping on me.
Wow, man.
And because I was cut out of the film, it didn't make it on IMDb, and I didn't get any further work out of it. And I only got a day rate. It was a half-day day rate, SAG-AFTRA minimum.
Man, wow, that's too bad, man.
File UC-13, podcast interview between United States Senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, and musician Belcalis Marlenis Almanzar, alias Cardi B.
Do you think that that intervention, whether it's from the military or the CIA, should come to a close? Do you think it's been detrimental to the future and the livelihoods of the Dominican people?
I mean, yeah, it's fucked up. It's fucked up. You got putting in dictators in DR Trujillo. Okay, why the fuck you think my
Trujillo,
family...
Trujillo is a bad guy.
Yeah, why the fuck you think my family moved to the United States from DR?
This touches on a crucial issue as we face an immigration crisis today, largely of President Trump's doing. One thing that is said far too little is that many times refugees and other migrants are forced to do so because of the policies of the United States upturning the livelihoods of people in the country, whether through a coup d'etat, whether through simple, other means of intervention, economic, violent, etc. Do you agree that our immigration crisis is tied to our imperial policies and foreign policies overseas?
Bernie, we got some bad policies. The U.S. got some bad policies. They displacing people. They're making people flee their native countries.
Sure.
Okay, these are beautiful places, Bernie. The United States, and they fucking, the CIA, they're all fucking up in there. They're fucking doing backdoor shit, shady shit.
Backdoor shit, but not the kind of backdoor shit that we can all support, which is the Cardi B backdoor shit.
I like backdoor shit, but this is backdoor shit.
Cardi, I don't know if I should offer this to you before I even have the nomination for the presidency. Your insight into these issues of foreign policy, into these issues of social justice within our borders and spanning into other countries, our role in history, our role in the world, your insights, your instincts are so vast and comprehensive, I think I could offer you a position in the Sanders administration, should I win. And my question is, would you want, what cabinet? Would you be the CIA director? Would you be the director of Central Intelligence in a Sanders administration?
Motherfucker, hell yeah. Hell yeah, I want to be head of the CIA. Okay?
It's an organization that has far too much power and nobody can audit them and they do nothing good in the world. But I'm almost, if you'll notice, I don't really speak out about them very much, even though I'm probably their biggest enemy in domestic politics. I kind of don't say much about them because I don't want to rile up, you know, it's like a hornet's nest. How could anything be done that's good with the Central Intelligence Agency? Even with Cardi B in charge, it is an organization that's almost dedicated from its inception to doing bad things. What could you do to help me? What could be done with the Central Intelligence Agency to make it a force for good? Or do you think it should just be disbanded?
All right, okay, you put me in charge of the CIA, so I'm head of the Central Intelligence Agency. Okay, I have unlimited access.
That is the job description.
Unlimited funds.
Well, that's right. There is a black budget. Congress approves a budget, and they also get a budget from selling illegal currencies and drugs around the world. I would like to bring that to a stop.
Okay, number one, okay, we're going to change these outfits, okay? All right, we're going to be looking fly, we're going to be looking good, we're going to be looking snatched, okay?
Okay,
we're
so it's going to look...
upgraded waves.
It's going to look a little bit cooler, or just from an aesthetic point of view, a little bit more like an intelligence agent in a movie.
Okay, you're going to make me a boss bitch? All my bitches under me going to look like boss bitches too.
File UC-14, recorded conversation between former Vice President Joe Biden and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
God damn it.
You okay there?
Can I get a bottle of aspirin?
Yeah, I've got aspirin right here.
actually. Oh, I keep it in my little shirt pocket.
I got these wallpaper people. They come up and they taste everything.
Oh.
They're my they test everything for poison. Mm. I lose about one every 6 weeks.
Oh, people are trying to kill you?
No, it's accidentally poison. I sometimes eat leftovers that have been out too long. Salmonella usually. It's me accidentally poisoning myself.
Hi. Okay. So you get confused a lot.
You want to try? Let's try. Will you try these?
Okay.
Just will you take up a half a bottle of aspirin for me, honey? Yeah. Oh God, she's wait. Oh boy, lost another one.
Oh. Should we?
Well, it's an interesting test for you, Pete. What do you want to do? You want to be a power player in the top? You just saw a wallpaper assistant fall dead from an overdose of aspirin.
Joe, I can't be a part of this.
Maybe they weren't aspirin. You think I'm just a doddering old fuck? I've forgotten a lot, but one thing I haven't forgotten is pure power play. And as I'm looking at you, I'm looking at you across the table. Man to man. I'm progressive enough. I stopped saying, look,
oh, geez.
I stopped using gay slurs halfway into Barack Obama's presidency. So I understand.
So did I.
I'm looking at you man to man across this table here at the Four Seasons in Detroit.
Just two guys.
There's a dead wallpaper intern on the floor. There's a couple more. Look, you see how they're trained? They're trained like Dobermans. They don't even flinch. They're not going to...
Hi there.
So what do you do, Pete, presented with this problem? Because you're an accessory. Whatever happens here, you might be an accessory to it. What do they teach you in the intelligence corps, huh? You must know where some of the bodies are buried.
I guess you would just have to...
It's crab season, Pete. Think fast.
Dump them in the river and hope that the crawdaddies have their way with them.
That's right. I see. If you didn't learn that in South Bend, you sure as hell learned it in Kabul.
File UC-151. Musician Stephen Van Zandt, alias Little Stephen, speaking on the ancient Sumerian text, The Epic of Gilgamesh.
Good morning, boys and girls. It's your old pal, Little Stephen. And you are listening, as always, to Little Steven's Underworld Garage, a show where we explore the ancient backstage mythologies, the chart-topping lost clay tablets, and the afterlives of these classic heroes and Neolithic artists who gave us so much in the time before recorded history. This week, we explore the cool scene of ancient Uruk, as remembered in the classic Mesopotamian legend, The Epic of Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh, of course, before he became the very greatest world-famous demigod of myth and legend, was a king in the ancient Babylonian period. Rumor held that King Gilgamesh was two-thirds divine and one-third mortal, but those who saw him play live said he was all God. While there was no denying his talent, Gilgamesh's wild, wild ways came to the attention of the studio bosses at the time, a pantheon of Sumerian and Babylonian deities, the gods. They decided to tame him by sending a rival or a fixer, depending on the telling of the tale. A wild man from heaven and a bad man in his own right, Enkidu. Enkidu was hurled from heaven, where he hit the earth with a massive percussive bang and immediately started rampaging. The divine plan of the gods went off the rails almost immediately. They realized that before Enkidu could ever settle down Gilgamesh, they would have to send somebody to settle down the madman himself. The gods cooked up an idea to tame Enkidu, and that was to send Shamat. Shamat was a local temple priestess, the Sumerian seer, and a legendary vixen, already renowned around the ancient world for her seductive romantic entanglements with such luminary figures as Nimrod, Odysseus, Eric Clapton, and even the Gemini twins.
File UC-152, recorded conversation between inventor Elon Musk, musician Claire Boucher, alias Grimes, and musician Azalea Banks.
I have cats. I'm a very nice person.
I have cats too. Can we reanimate them back into life to have her pet them, or will they be some kind of like robo cat?
Let me ask the housekeeper if she can find where I told her to put them.
Sheely! Sheely! Yes, Elon. Yes, Grimes.
Do you know where those cats went?
The cats are in suspended animation.
Suspended animation.
Suspended animation. They can be brought back whenever you wish to have them.
Gilly girl, okay, blink twice at me, bitch, if you need to go, because I'm about to get an Uber. What the hell? Gilly!
I just had to shoot her with 4 non-lethal rounds.
Yeah. Y'all niggas is wilding right now, dog. White people just so bananas. Okay, I gotta get the fuck out of here. Like, this is...
Look, I've said you can get out anytime. You can go through that series of doors, and if you successfully open the right ones, it'll open up into what you think is...
What happens if I open the wrong door?
Then have you ever seen that movie, The Maze?
No.
Or The Cube? I forget which one it's
called.
I'm not
really familiar
with
the works.
What's that teenager, young adult movie where the kids get out of the box?
The Maze Runner.
The Maze Runner. It's like that movie, The Maze Runner. Yeah. Once you're in my complex of Hyperloop tubes in Bel Air / Hawthorne. That's right. It's like The Maze Runner. And you can freely exit if you can figure out which way to go.
What happens if I go through this window right now?
If you go through this window right now, what happens is you'll start hearing that song from Giorgio Moroder in the 1980s, the one that's like dun 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 dun, and that's like the coolest song I've ever heard. And it'll be like just an endless chase, like from it's the theme from the Midnight Express, and it's just like this long chase, but it will never end. You'll be running through like an endless series of boxes and what appear to be like futuristic nightmare scapes. So you're free to go. Like I said, you can go. Like there's an infinite layout of places that you can run.
I did it once and it was actually so fun.
But she escaped and came back to me.
Yeah.
Because I like to say this, and this is whether it's somebody I'm trying to compel to have a threesome with me or whether it's like someone that I'm in love with as a partner. If you love someone, let them go. And so I do. I let them go into my vast network of inescapable chambers and puzzle rooms. And you let them go, and they're either going to wander back because they left some breadcrumbs, or they're going to accidentally take a wrong turn and end up back in your place. And that means that they truly love you because they came back.
File UC-16, musical recording of Another Brick in the Wall, music and lyrics by Roger Waters, vocals by philosopher Slavoj Žižek, and First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump.
This is essential to an understanding of not only ideology, but horseshoe theory between our agreements.
We don't need no education. Funds leads to dreads, ducks, deep flips and teeth. We don't need no short control and so forth. But it's some tenets, 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 and tenets. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. All in all, it's just another brick in the wall, whether communist or capitalist. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall, etc. We don't need no education.
This was always said in underground literary arguments. This argument.
We don't need no control.
And yet, organisms of capitalism impressed him upon me. No dark sarcasm
in the classroom.
As I've always said,
teacher leaves on kids alone. Hey, teacher,
leave this kid
alone.
As we said, etc. in Louisiana.
All in all, you just had another brick in the wall. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
from a Hegelian dialect.
I like to sing it operatic because I trained in Milan as a model in an opera.
Under any ideology, the function, as we clearly see, is that you are merely ideologically used as a brick to reinforce a system or other system. And we must break free of these with walking hammer sickle men that are hammering and ordering, etc. I would like to see Roger Waters reunite again with David Gilmour.
File UC-17, radio interview between actor, director Orson Welles and actor, musician Liza Minnelli. Note, this archival recording was underfunded and unreleasable.
That was just so fun, wasn't it?
You liked it.
It was so fun.
Well, if I made emotion, I auditioned for one of the parts.
Oh, what part?
Well, Darth Vader.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Well, you couldn't hear
it. I auditioned for C-3PO.
I threw a tantrum because they put a big black helmet on me. There's some scenes out there recorded where I was Darth Vader.
I'd like to see that.
Well, it's, I believe it was the, Rebels. And now, well, let me, if you allow it, I'll slowly get into character the way I used to with John Falstaff.
Oh, please do.
On the Dean Martin show, I'll slowly get into character, but instead of Falstaff, I'll be playing the Darth Vader.
I'll be Governor
Tark.
Whatever
the hell that is.
And we'll have a conversation about the Death Star. Governor Tarkin.
Governor Tarkin.
Star Wars. He was
sort of the friend.
He was the boss, kind of.
Well, here
it is. And he had sunken cheeks and a British accent and blew up Alderaan.
Could I hear Green Sleeves? Is there any way to play Green Sleeves? I always like to play Green Sleeves, whether I'm getting into character as John Falstaff or someone else.
And what's your method of acting? Because my method is usually Benadryl.
Well, it's funny you ask that because... And you just pop the foundation and just chub it up there a little bit. Highlights on the rosy cheeks, of course. Every character I do, I begin by putting on a John Falstaff costume. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you about Sir Darth Vader. He was what you might call a swinger. Now, of course, in a galaxy far, far away and long ago, they wouldn't have called him a swinger, but he was most certainly that. He certainly swung. And as he would have said it, he was not only a Skywalker, but the cause of Skywalking in other men. And yes, now you see we put these fuzzy eyebrows up on the top so that you start to look like an Oompa Loompa that's grown old and wealthy. And then there's a bald cap, if you weren't already bald enough, and then you stuck a big mustache on, and we're into Falstaff and almost into Darth Vader. Over all of this, we squeeze on a Darth Vader helmet. I always keep it here in this, and I went, where's that? Bring me the Vader helmet. You! Where is the Vader? Where is this Sir Darth Vader helmet? I hear you. There it is. Well, we've got the Falstaff on. Now it's time to squeeze on this Darth Vader helmet to complete the costume. Damn.
And I've squeezed it on. We've got a full Sir John Falstaff costume on with a Darth Vader helmet squeezed over it. That's the way I get into character, you assholes. Liza, are you there? This damned helmet is already falling.
Governor Tarkin was in charge. He was a general in the Death Star.
Oh, I see you're getting into character, too.
Yes, and I have a British accent.
I'll just sit here with this space helmet on, a trash can.
Well, we'll just rehearse this one scene. All right, ready?
Are you in character?
Yes.
And so now we present the Darth Vader and Governor, what is it?
Tarkin.
Tarkin. What a silly name he has.
Darth Vader.
Yes.
The Millennium Falcon. We believe that there's passengers on board, and one of them is Han Solo.
Well, there's a Millennium Falcon, and you've got Han Solo. Well, it sounds like he's alone. That can't be. If he's solo, that's not the one we're looking for.
Well, there's the princess. She won't tell us the secrets.
Yes, a princess. It's goddamn hot in this helmet.
It looks tight.
It is tight, and I'm rapidly... What you're seeing is it's cutting off circulation through my outer jowl. Should I take the helmet off and get into character all over again?
Yes.
Oh, very well. You've got to help me pull it off.
Oh, my God. Let me just... nails. My nails. Tom, you got... Oh, the smell. I can't handle it.
The space.
File UC-18, recorded conversation between United States Senator Bernie Sanders and former First Lady of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt. Note, this recording is possibly of supernatural origin, which puts it under the purview of the Ghostbusters.
I have been very much inspired by some of the artwork that has cropped up during my campaigns for presidency and the Senate, the Senate seat from Vermont, that have my face with a David Bowie lightning bolt down the edge. Has anybody done anything similar to that with you? Did anybody with you or Franklin dress you up in the great stars of the time? Did anybody put a Sinatra hat on you and go, this is how I think of them?
There was once a cabaret act that did tassels in the nature of my own breasts.
They were pasties.
Yes, they were pasties. They were Eleanor's Rosies, is what they called them. And it was a very successful act. I saw it more than once.
I have not told anyone this. Not even Jane knows this. When I am intimate with Jane, she's not here, of course. I'm alone tonight. She's off on a wood bead conference.
One of my favorite type of conferences. I've been to many. Woodbeads are my favorite.
So she has. I've worn a light T-shirt whenever we've been intimate these last decades. But I have been wearing custom pasties on my, well, let's face it, my nipples.
Yep.
For years in anticipation of winning the Democratic nomination for president, I have the point was to rip off a shirt and then have these pasties they're sparkling pasties that shoot numbers.
Bernie Sanders, always be prepared.
I hope that they still work when I eventually win.
They could be mechanically defunct right now, or should we check?
We gotta check my pasties. They look a little bit, let me lift up the T-shirt here. They look a little bit, they're a little bit droopy.
They're droopy, but they're functional, which is the most important thing. I love those. May I try them on?
You want me to rip my pasties off my nips?
I do. I can't explain it. I've always been curious. I've never been fulfilled.
If there's one thing I know about you, is that you've been very curious.
Very curious.
Throughout all of your lifestyles.
All my life.
Here, while I pull these pasties off, well, I'm going to ask you a very serious question.
Okay. Well, this is interesting.
Hold on. Does anybody have any duck butter?
Are you talking to me?
Oh, God. I'm still, I mean,
duck butter.
Where am I?
Duck
where
butter.
Is I?
Let me check
what
my
am I,
purse.
What am I seeing? Oh, it's Eleanor, here, I know. I've been here for an eternity. I've never left.
Oh, I found some duck butter, by the way.
Eleanor, a timeless creature like yourself. And a timeful creature like myself. Always, I look in the mirror and I feel like I'm always about 39.
Yes. Just as I am 85.
What do I do? Where do I go? You're so wise. Here's one of them. It's a dangly little half-broken pasty.
Isn't that fantastic?
If you'll notice, if you move it, you can hear the creaking in some of the joints because I've had them on for a long time.
It's fantastic, and there's a touch of hair here, there's a touch of flesh. Ah, the human spirit.
I lactate oat milk. I'm trying to get the damn thing off my tit.
It's fine. One is good.
You want to just...
You have one.
Share
I have one.
A set of pasties.
Yes.
I feel like I'm truly communing with the beyond.
I feel like I've returned for my true purpose. Sharing a set of pasties.
File UC-19. Podcast interview between television presenter Chris Matthews and presidential candidate Andrew Yang.
For those who don't understand, a UBI... It's a urinary basic income.
Universal basic income.
It's universal basic income. So it's people that work at Universal, NBC, MSNBC, Universal.
Exactly.
And we get a basic income. Oh, it sounds like I'm in favor. I got to swap my support over from Biden or anybody but Bernie, definitely to Andrew Yang.
We want to make sure that everyone in this country is making at least as much as the highest paid MSNBC anchor, which is famously $1,000.
$1,000 a month.
$1,000.
Look, I'm not going to argue with that. If it makes me sound more of a populist, more of me of the people, somebody should be tuning in and not circling around my house trying to break in and steal all what we got inside. I got five houses. You know that? I got five houses. Three of them I rent out. There's one of them is taken over by deer out there in rural. Yeah, one of them is taken over by deer in rural Maryland.
I see.
That's what happens when you leave apples laying around and the gates are unlocked.
This is so hard with you, Chris, because everything that you say is so much more outrageous than the last. And in fact,
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. It's a great compliment. It's a good song because it's like the flattery's not going to get you anywhere.
This interaction is very similar. The energy of this interaction is exactly the kind of
UBI.
Yes.
UBI. You're a Gen X guy. I want to pin you down on this. You're straight down the middle Gen X. Now I've got problems with Generation X. Not as much as the millennials, which I think I'm looking forward to the day when the millennials can be rounded up and forced into labor camps. That's the way. I'm not alone in that mainstream media. We really have a great contempt for them and what they've done with little we left them. But I'm not a member. I'm not the greatest generation. I'm not a member of the Lost generation, I'm the loud generation, which is right in between the lost generation and baby boomers. Baby boomers really get a bad rap. A lot of people really coming down hard on the baby boomers. I want to ask you this. You're Gen X. You're the generation.
Life.
The great crime of Gen X. I want to see if you answer for the Gen X crimes against humanity. Because you guys, you threw the baby in the, I know, saw the Nirvana threw the baby in the swimming pool. You guys had these festivals sliding around in mud.
Baby, by the way, I would like to point out that baby was and is circumcised.
Okay, so you have a problem with that.
I do.
You have a problem with that. And they said you're public about this. Is this saying you're all over your Twitter? Your Twitter, you're all over that?
I went to Exeter Academy, which is an academy full of uncircumcised
Exeter
boys.
and I heard any of the pupils at Exeter would know that firsthand. Exactly. based on the extracurricular activities.
There are so many activities at Exeter that revolve around the foreskin that were robbed of me and all the boys at Exeter Academy.
So you are circumcised, and it's almost like an albatross that's not around your neck, if you will.
Exactly. And I'm working on it. You can get your foreskin back, which is a big part of my healthcare program.
Is that a great quest?
When I talk about, you know, a lot of candidates are talking about Medicare for all. I'm talking about, of course, fleshy hoods for your penises for all.
Now, you're talking about this, but I've heard some of the Yang gang that are out there, the Yang gang, say that this is a part of the platform.
It is absolutely a part of the platform. I want to
outlaw circumcision or heavily tax it? Or you give up your UBI if you have a circumcision?
If you want your baby circumcised, you lose out on $1,000 a month. In fact, you have to pay the government $1,000 a month. If you want, for every year that your son or daughter... goes without a foreskin.
File UC20, podcast interview between actor Gary Busey and musician Gene Simmons.
So you've elevated your chakras to a level without the aid, without the crutch, you might say, of false narratives, false gods of alcohol and these drugs.
There's only one god to pay attention to, and that's the god of rock and roll and the god of making money, which is also my business.
That's one of the great reasons. You're a patriot. I'm so happy to have you on as a representative of the entertainment community, because there is a stereotype out there. The people who are successful role models in this entertainment industry are all leftish liberals who believe in, you know, who believe in society where everybody's holding hands.
No.
I believe in a society where everybody is not holding hands. You're standing as close as you can to each other, but if anything, you just sort of nod your head.
Exactly. The world is a jungle. Okay. The world is a jungle, and there need to be lions.
Now, there are lions. Mm-hmm. As we all know from all jungles and all nature videos, there are lions. There are lion kings. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes that there's a lion that pushes another one over the edge of a cliff, which has I've experienced that. Oh, yeah. I was simulating. I was doing some of my Tai Chi where I deliberately mimicked the actions of Disney films like The Lion King on the cliffs of Chautauqua and Pacific Palisades.
I know the area.
Right there between there and Will Rogers State Park. And I was doing, there was a scar-like figure. And it turned out it was actually Jeremy Irons who pushed me over the edge of a cliff.
Irons can't be trusted.
Jeremy, you're familiar, you ran into Jeremy Irons. I haven't trusted him since M. Butterfly, that gender-bending bullshit.
A 17-year ongoing feud with Jeremy Irons. We were reaching for the same sushi loaf at the Gelson's over there in the Malibu area. And since then, it's just been downhill. We've been friends, but at that time.
That's how I met you, actually. You do your shopping in Malibu.
I do.
You do your shopping at the Mayfair Market in Malibu.
Mayfair.
Right up
Gelson's,
there in Topanga.
All the big ones.
Right. These are the Malibu grocery stores. Mayfair, Gelson's, mm-hmm. The Whole Foods is the low end.
That's where they go.
I put myself on a budget. That's where they go.
They go.
That's the lower class people in Malibu from Malibu, Malibu Colony, which is seaside.
Exactly. We know who they are.
That's where the Pepperdine Oy Polloi, that's where they hang out.
Pepperdine.
Oof. File UC21. Oh, that's it. We're done.
That's episode 21 of The Underculture. You can follow us on Instagram at UnderculturePod, on Twitter at The Underculture. You can, of course, find us on Patreon, where we are releasing all of the songs from all 20 existing episodes. All the songs are there as MP3 files because people have been requesting it. So all the karaoke songs, all the ridiculous theme songs, they're all on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/... The Underculture. And of course, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. I guess you're doing that now. And our Patreon, we want to thank all our subscribers. That allows us to continue paying all of our amazing guests. You heard a sampling of them here to run through very quickly. They were, in order of appearance, Alyssa Lynn Paris, Sam Pancake, Carl Tart, Brett Davis, Alice Wetterland, Rob King, Ellie Woods, Anthony Atamanik, Rachel Butera, Jerry Miner, Danielle Perez, John Milheiser, Courtney Peroso, Madison Shepherd, Lori Tatulian, Matteo Lane, Emily Maya Mills, Joel Kim Booster, Cash Abdul Malik, and this unrepentant asshole and your obedient servant, James Adomian, signing off here at The Underculture. Until next time.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.